Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Josh Norris, Baseball America Prospect podcast and video on YouTube. And today we are talking all about the complex leagues. Josh is our resident complex league maven. He is one of the few people I would say that doesn't work for an organization who can say that he has seen all three complexes this year. He went to, I think it was Florida, Arizona, DSL, right? That's your,
that was your the other way around. But yeah, the
Arizona, Florida, DSL.
Yeah, I think I did it that way, but I'm not 100% sure, which is kind of
sad. You saw the Florida Complex League, you saw the Arizona Complex League, and then you spent some time down in the Dominican as well, saw the Dominican Summer League All-Star Game. Yes, there is still a minor league All-Star Game. We don't get those in the full season leagues. DSL still has it. But then also saw DSL regular season games as well. You have written our Florida Complex League top prospects list. You have written our Arizona Complex League top prospects list. And you are currently working on, now that the Dominican Summer League season is over, congratulations to the DSL Padres Gold for winning the DSL title. You are now working on our DSL prospects top, however many prospects that number
30.
Is going to.
30.
30? 300?
We did 31 300? Last year, and the one didn't turn out. But, 30 is pretty good. It's I think last year was like 2,500 players in the league or something. So I'll just, preface it by saying I'm going to miss some guys. But finding 2,500 players, it's pretty difficult. It's 52-team league, which is almost the entirety of a classification in full season ball.
It is the largest league in professional baseball, and I don't think it's really close. I guess the closest would be, and it's not a comparison, would be Serie A1 in Italy, because the Italian league pretty much includes almost all their teams playing. I don't want to put a comparison though, because that's like Fortuno's like prospect team is in the league at the first part of the season. This is 52 actual professional teams who all battle it out. And then have a extremely small and short postseason as well. I would say that you can fairly say congratulations again to Padres Gold, but at the same time, you blink and you miss the DSL playoffs for a league that there's a lot fewer teams in the playoffs in there than there are in the Major League Baseball with 30 teams.
It was a bigger playoff this year. The format changed this year, and I forget which club it was. Might have been the Padres. It was the Marlins. They had their two affiliates playing each other in the playoffs. So, that's kind of where we are.
But I did want to ask with that, to kind of set the stage, because we know that some of you watching this or listening to this are probably not ACL, FCL, DSL experts. So, Josh, if you could kind of start by just explaining to people what the complex leagues are and why it is important to care about them.
Complex leagues are games that are played on the backfields of their team's spring training complexes. So there's, I think it's 16 in Arizona and 14 in Florida. Obviously a little more compact in Arizona, a little less compact in Florida. But it's for the youngest players, the last year's draftees who, didn't advance the full season ball, the guys from the DSL the year prior, a lot of rehabbers. It's a more controlled environment than you might see. A lot of teams' coaches are down there. It's just kind of baseball or pro baseball in its earliest stages. It's not the prettiest baseball you're going to see. In fact, it might be the ugliest sometimes. You'll check a DSL score every once in a while and you'll see a team score 30 or 15 runs in an inning or something like that. And, I saw there was a game in the DSL that I attended that was 7 innings and it was 4 hours. So, those kind of things happen. But it is the place where you go to see your favorite prospects before they become anything most of the time. I mean, some of the big ones jump to full season ball, most of the college guys from the draft. But, your younger players, last year's list had Edward Florentino on it, who's on a top 100 prospect last year. This not this time, you know, last July, he was in the DSL All-Star game. Jesus Madé was in the DSL All-Star game for one memorable strikeout. Luis Peña was in that game. Hit his first, didn't count, pro home run in that game. You know, that's where they really start to pop. And that's where, if you're in our shoes, you get them before, you know, I won't say anybody, because most of these teams have YouTube feeds right now of their games where they flash, you know, all the TrackMan data if you want. You just have to kind of work a little bit to find them. I'm not sick enough to even watch those, usually, because it's not the greatest view. But that's where they really start to blossom, and you try to get them before they're, you know, famous. I know of one team that, you know, attempted to acquire Jackson Chourio in the DSL. The Brewers knew what they had. So
that was a smart attempt.
Junior Caminero was traded when he was in the DSL, or, you know, in his DSL year. Guardians, I don't know if the Guardians knew what they had, but if they did, they probably wouldn't have traded him. But good job by the Rays scouting that league, and they have a pretty heavy presence down there, and got him on the cheap for a guy that, you know, for Tobias Myers, who also didn't make an impact in Cleveland.
I mean, another example of that, he had not played in a game yet, but Jordan Alvarez traded from the Dodgers to the Astros, and then his first game is listed as DSL Astros, but it was after he had been traded. He was originally a Dodger. So you can truly hit on franchise-changing players. And the other thing I love about the complexes, I think you do too, you love seeing players and kind of learning about the next wave,
right,
as early as you can.
Right. If I go to Charlotte this weekend and see Thomas White, this is a terrible example because he was never going to pitch in the DSL. If I went to Frisco this weekend and told you about Sebastian Walcott, well, good for you. Also, there's this stock called NVIDIA that seems to be on the rise. You know, I can tell you about that too. But if I go to the DR and I tell you about such and such player, you know, that's more advantageous for your fantasy guys, or, you know, teams really don't take advice from us, but not much. But people in the public space to, you know, get their autographs or their, you know, get clued into their who they're who's going to star for their favorite team here in a couple of years, or more than a couple in the DSL. But yeah.
The other thing I would say about it is, and I enjoy this, and I miss this about what the Appy League used to be. This is the level, like when you said, when you go to Charlotte, if you do this weekend, the other thing about it is when you watch that game, you may see something that opens your eyes, but it's largely to add to a pretty hefty amount of information you already have about these players. Because when you see, like you said, you see Thomas White, your expectation going in is that Thomas White is going to look quite good because he's Thomas White. And we know that Thomas White is one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. When you went down to the Dominican this year, you were seeing guys pop who you may have not known anything about them before they stepped on the mound. Right.
Right. I mean, it's not, you know, I can do myself a little bit of cheating on the test by reading Ben Badler's international reviews, which usually come out before I go. But the guys who get the biggest money aren't always the best players. I mean, there's going to be multiple guys on this DSL top 30 that were $10,000 signs. And, you know, one of my favorite stats was a couple of years ago when the Phillies and the Astros were in the World Series, the first three winners of the, you know, the winning pitchers in the first three games signed for a combined $40,000 combined. And, you know, it's not always the big money that does it. In fact, some of the big money players were really disappointing this year. But there are others who signed for far less who, I mean, you know, hits a rocket to that star. They're easy impact players.
That kind of leads to another question. So the DSL is its own entity, right? The DSL is where pretty much all international signings, and to the exclusion of anything else, right? There are no draftees playing in the DSL.
No.
The DSL is for international signees. And a key distinction about this, in an era where there are strict roster limits about the domestic U.S. minor league rosters, these players do not count towards the 165 limit or anything like that. So one of the reasons the league is 52 teams is that this is kind of where teams and organizations are figuring out what they have there. And then you hit on it. The Florida and Arizona complex leagues have become in a lot of ways, especially early in the season, like again, very late in the season, you'll start season draftees filter in. You will always have some draftees from last year who are in the complex leagues. But the vast majority of players who aren't injury rehabbers or things like that in these leagues are international signees. And it's kind of become the next step for the players coming out of the DSL. And the key distinction with that is then they do count. The minute a player comes to the States nowadays, they're a counter, right? You have to, it's always been, there's a limited number of visas and all for players coming over. But now we've added that wrinkle of, if you bring a player over for instructs, that player now is treated as part of your domestic roster. You know, spring training, they're counters now. So you have your off-season list, but once the season begins, they count towards your 165. Your 165 minor league players that you're allowed in the U.S. So the mere act of bringing a player over from the DSL to play in the Florida or Arizona complex leagues by itself kind of indicates this is a more significant prospect than the players who are left back. Doesn't mean that repeaters in the DSL can never turn into solid big league players or anything like that. But there is something to that. But I would also say with this, you talked about this when you went to Florida and Arizona. Those leagues are on the same level. They're the same idea. The players going in those, you have your teams that have spring training in Florida, basically are your Florida complex league teams. Your teams that have spring training in Arizona are your Arizona complex league teams. But that doesn't mean that the talent is distributed evenly. And that was the case this year, was it not?
Right, but I want to back up for a second. Yeah. You did make the point that I think I wanted to stress. With the roster limits in place now, there's less of a stigma on repeating that league. If I were to do this list 10 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever, 5 years ago, it'd be really bad because that was 2020.
Short list.
Yeah, it's a defined list. I would probably just ignore all the guys who were repeating unless there was like an injury scenario. This year, there's going to be multiple guys who are up high on this list who are repeating the league and, sue them for taking a little longer as a 17-year-old to maybe reach their peak or get into better shape or for their body to develop or what have you. I'll just drop one. Edgar Montero with the A's is going to be up pretty high on the list, and he's a repeater, but he crushed this year, and, it was as an 18-year-old. Or 17, 18, whatever it was this year. And he was excellent. And he's an up arrow prospect. He's going to be, I believe, somewhere in the top 10. So I would put less of a stigma on repeating the DSL right now just because of the way the mechanics work.
We're throwing a curveball at you this week for our Arena Club segment as AJ has opened up a Pokemon Slap Pack.
Is that how you say it?
Pokemon
Slap Pack.
Pokemon. Don't ask me to say what that card is, but what are you doing with that card?
I already sold it. Are you kidding me?
Sold it back, baby.
I bought it, and then I got more money than I paid for the pack, so I sold it straight back.
You bought it for?
$250.
You sold it for?
$299.
And you can go get yourself something that you maybe know how to pronounce.
Yes, or know what it is. I just did it because I saw certain people opening Pokemon, and they were making money, and guess what? I got lucky. Made money off of it too.
Exactly. But of course, if you're into sports cards, that is something that you can find a ton of on the Arena Club Marketplace. Buy, sell, slab pack, trade. 20% off your first slab pack or card purchase can be had at arenaclub.com/foul and use the code FOUL. That's arenaclub.com/foul and use code FOUL.
But you mentioned the Florida and Arizona leagues. Yeah, the talent was a little more slanted toward Arizona this year. Year prior, it was the other way around, or at least it seemed. A lot of the big names from that list have busted or have been injured. But some of it's just dependent on the health of whichever systems at the time. If all if the best systems in baseball are teams that happen to be in Florida, well, then the Florida Complex League stands to be better. Or it also depends on how aggressively people promote their players. Like a couple of years ago, you know, you would have said, okay, Ethan Salas is probably going to be the number one prospect in this league. Nope. He gone. He's skipping over this league entirely. Same deal with Leo DeVries. Promoted. He didn't count. So it kind of thins the potential prospect pool almost immediately. This year, it was a lot of Giants on the ACL list and really slim pickings in the, I say really slim pickings, but I went five further than I did the year prior because I just can't exclude anyone. That is my curse. But it was a little trickier in the Florida Complex League, whereas like I named like five Giants. I probably could have put in two
you
more.
In Florida, you did name five.
Yeah. I said, but I did five Giants in the ACL list because it was just that easy. I had that much talent to pick from. In Florida, it was like, okay, this team maybe has one guy, and this team maybe has one guy. And there's a couple, and there's some talented players who just don't qualify because they don't pitch enough or hit enough or whatever.
Would you say with that like if you're a prospect watcher, if you're someone who you're a Baseball America, you know, you read us, you want to know about the best prospects the earliest. Has it shifted a little bit from, because I also bring up with this, a lot of the players that you mentioned, a lot of the top players that you mentioned from your DSL list last year skipped over the complexes this year, or if they didn't skip over, Jesus Mate, Luis Peña, guys like that skipped over it. Or in other cases, like you said, like a Fiorentino, like there were guys who they may have passed through, but what we're seeing now a lot of times is we are seeing kind of a top tier of these guys who, as you said, also, you mentioned the Padres are a unique case, but Salas and DeVries being guys who are basically like, no, low A's where it's at right away. But what I'm saying though is we are seeing more of these top prospects either skip over the Florida and Arizona complexes, or if they do go there, it's just briefly to kind of establish themselves a little further and then bump up they go again.
I don't think it's necessarily the case. It might be a little bit with last year. I pulled up the 2024 list as we're talking. The Brewers do, you know, they are very similar to the Padres in that if you are good, they will jump you over the complex league easily. And they will send you to, well, next year it'll be Wilson. This in recent years, it had been Carolina, RIP Mudcats, RIP Five County Stadium, at least. But there are some other guys that, rewriting the Arizona and Florida lists are basically like rewriting the DSL lists. Like I'm looking at Yairo Padilla was on the Florida State League or the Florida Complex League list. Emil Morales was in the Arizona list. Josua Lugo was in the Arizona list. Yolfran Castillo was in the Arizona list. Anderson Brito with the Astros, he did not qualify for, he had already moved up pretty quickly. Esteban Mejia was the number one prospect in the Florida list.
Yeah, Randy moved Andrade, up pretty quickly, but did qualify.
Right. I mean, he pitched most of the year in the Florida Complex. Like, he didn't move until like that season was nearly done. Reniel Rodriguez, same idea. Johnny Level, same idea. I mean, that was the top 10 right there. And most of them can be found on the corresponding next year's lists. And some of them can be found in the top 100. At least two of them. Oh, one of them. No, three of them. What am I saying? I don't think it's necessarily a lot of guys that jumped that quickly. It's just kind of which players are in which organizations and are those organizations aggressive. Like if you're Padres or Brewers, you're going to jump pretty quickly. If you're in others, you're not.
Well, that kind of leads into the perfect segue to set us up for. We're going to talk about some of the players who stood out in each of these leagues this year. Like I said, Josh did those lists. Josh is working on those lists. But we are also going to, before we do that, talk a little bit about if you are looking at the DSL, you think that there are things you should pay attention to and things that you should probably pay a little less attention to. And we'll cover right after this quick break.
Hiring the right people fast keeps your team moving forward without losing momentum. Every day a position stays open is a day you're missing productivity, creativity, and growth. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One thing I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it allows you to rapidly sort through candidates based on your preferences. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Introducing the Star Patrol Spotlight, the most intense flashlight you've ever seen. Compared to two car headlights, the Star Patrol shines up to four times as bright.
That's bright!
Illuminate objects up to a half mile away, even from the top of a skyscraper. The Star Patrol easily lights up buildings from across the skyline.
That's insanely bright!
Push Turbo Boost for a crazy bright boost that's 100 times brighter for 30,000 candelas of mega bright light.
What? That's insanely bright!
With 10 illumination modes, the Star Patrol is a spotlight, floodlight, emergency light, and more. Take care of all your lighting needs with one Star Patrol. Don't settle for dull flashlights. If the Star Patrol isn't the brightest flashlight you've ever seen, return it for a full refund. Go to GetStarPatrol.com for your free turbo boost, plus free shipping and a money-back guarantee. That's GetStarPatrol.com. GetStarPatrol.com.
So, Josh, before we dive into players who stood out in these leagues, when you're in the DSL, Florida Complex League, Arizona Complex League, I would say that we would say in general that statistics get more and more informative the closer you get to the majors. But at the same time, they matter at all levels. But is it fair to say that when you say, oh, why is this player not higher on your DSL prospects list? Look at the numbers he produced as a hitter or as a pitcher in the DSL. Those are where the statistics are the least informative of probably any level. Is that fair?
Without question. I mean, don't even bother looking at walk rate. I mean, I think you and I could stand there with a bat and not swing and probably work a 10% walk rate. That the pitching is sometimes just that bad. So if you see a guy, oh, there's one guy, I think he's going to rank. We'll have a call here in a couple hours. He's got 30 more walks than strikeouts. That's nice. But the strikeout rate being low is nice. Look at strikeout rate. Don't look at walk rate. And, there's the official scoring is interesting sometimes. So you might have hits that were errors, or you might have weird, field conditions sometimes. And I was talking to one guy, said, he played at this field, which is a super pitcher or hitter-friendly field. Most of his home runs would not be home runs stateside. So there's all sorts of things that go into that. It's just the kind of inconsistency of play that leads to those stats being a bit misleading.
So I'll give you an example. Pablo Nunez with the Reds, second year in the DSL with the Reds. Nunez had six extra base hits this year, but he hit .327 with a .542 on base percentage because he walked 41 times and he struck out six times. Now, you may see that and go, we are watching the next incarnation of Barry Bonds here as far as OBPs. It's going to be hard to carry that over to the next level.
I'm going to go ahead and say impossible.
Yes. Impossible is a good way to put it. But that is something where you do see that. And the other thing you mentioned, there are 52 teams in this league. The quality of play in each circle in which they play is not even either.
I mean, right? there was a case a couple years ago where a team was so injured that they had to sign dudes off the street and, put them in games as pitchers. That's worse than facing a position player pitching, arguably. So you just never really know. Context is so important, and that's why teams scout these leagues fairly heavily. Like, you know, that you'll see if it's a really big prospect that you're looking for in a deal, like you'll see four or five guys there from one club looking at whoever. There are names on this list that I'm going to put out, I think Friday, that were asked for pretty aggressively at the deadline.
I mean, let's just give one example, like as we kind of, before we even get to the players who stood out, we saw players traded at the deadline this year.
Carlos De La Rosa with the Yankees dealt in the deal that brought Duvall to New York. And, you know, even before that, I think I posted some stuff on him. I know Ben did. I think I put him as a guy to watch. I know I named him best breaking ball in the DSL All-Star game. Like, if you read Baseball America, you were not in the dark on Carlos De La Rosa. Like, that was an up arrow.
Right, we were shouting from the, you know, from the mountains that this is a guy to watch.
This is an interesting pitching prospect. It's not, you know, it's not like a future, you know, Paul Skeens or anything, but it's a potential rotation piece.
But he's a name who I would say that was out there. Like, that was not the only team that was interested in him either. Like, this was a player who
there were.
Go ahead.
As I know, there were at least two that were interested in him, and one landed him. So it's not like he was a foreign entity.
But I want to ask you with that. So what is it that you are? What you're looking on, that you're working on this list? Obviously, some of it is just, you know, there are tools that you're not going to see. Like, if you're a fan, like that, read Baseball America. We're going to tell you about them. But on top of that, what are things that do have a little bit more staying power that a fan who's trying to pay attention to this, who wants to dive into the DSL, can kind of look at?
Tools. And I don't know. I don't know what a fan can look at, honestly, unless, like I said, you watch those YouTube streams, and their quality is obviously varies. But it's tools. Like, I'm not in the DSL All-Star game. I do the superlatives off that game, and it's not like some of these guys, I don't know who they are coming into them. I get the rosters, and I go, okay, I know this guy and this guy, but I'm not familiar with these three other guys. And you watch the game, and then I take my video, and hopefully the cameras agree with me. And you go back and you look at it and you say, okay, this guy was the best. Like, this year I mentioned him already, Edgar Montero as the best hitter in that game. Well, why? Because he took 94, 95 in on his hands and pulled it one way, and he sat back on a breaking ball and shot it over the shortstop's head. Okay, that tells me he's got a pretty good swing. It looks pretty good from the left side. That's good enough for me. There wasn't any super standout performance in that game. And it's just interesting stuff. Like, Alexander Garcia from the Guardians. It was a pretty interesting arm, big frame, projectable, lively fastball, pretty good slider. Like, okay, I'll name him best fastball or something in that game. It's just snippets of tools that you can dream on. And oftentimes the guys who are in the games are the biggest names, but they aren't always. There's a lot of bigger names that weren't in the games.
So, okay, that we've set the stage now. Now we do want to give you some names. We've mentioned a few already, but we're going to go through each league. And again, if you want the full list, we have bigger list over at baseballamerica.com. We have rankings already for the Florida Complex and Arizona Complex leagues with scouting reports on 30 guys in each. But then we also have the DSL coming the end of this week. So as you listen to this, it's right around the corner. But Josh, kind of along those lines, who are two players in the Arizona Complex League who stood out to you?
Well, I'll just take the number one guy, Johnny Level. He didn't really, in my week there, I saw the Giants in an inordinate amount of times. But he didn't really do a whole lot stat-wise, but all the reports were like, this guy's really good. He's, you know, not your prototypical body, although is there even a prototypical body at shortstop anymore these days? But he can hit. He can really hit. And he's held his own more or less in the Cal League right now. But he's got really good swing from both sides of the plate. He takes mature at bats. I did see him in San Jose, which was ACL plus at that time. And it was mature at bats. He can really throw. He can probably handle shortstop. And if he's not, he could be a really good second baseman. But he's going to be high up on the Giants. He's a top five Giants prospect right now. And let's see. Let's not just cheat and go number two prospect. Chase Harlan with the Dodgers. Another guy they took on, took a chance on last year. They knew he was injured. He had a hip thing that kept him out of action, but they bet on the power. And so far, it looks like they bet right. He was probably the best prospect, best or second best prospect on the he was the best Dodgers prospect in the ACL this year, and he's done pretty well in the complex league or the California league right now too. So we'll just take two from California there and say those are guys who were up arrow in their systems. And you know, the bottom half of the Giant system in general is starting to bear fruit pretty rapidly.
That would say, like, if you said it was the takeaway for an organization that stood out in the Arizona Complex League, I know the ACL Angels won the title, but it was the Giants who really jumped out to you, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I got there the first day, and I went to see Giants-Dodgers, and I don't know who's going because there's no probables. You have to really fish around for probables. And they started a guy named Kaner Martinez, and he was really, really good. And I texted their farm director, I said, who the heck is this? Oh, well, he's converting from relief and yada, yada, yada. It's like, okay, he's mid to upper 90s with a banger slider and a little bit of a changeup. And I saw him again later in the week, and he had even a better changeup. It's like, okay, there's three pitches here. There's physicality. There's repeatability. This is pretty interesting. And he's done pretty well in the California League too. So there's another guy who's kind of moved up the ranks from unknown to, hey, this guy's pretty good. So yeah, that was an interesting one. They had Johnny Level. They had Arjenis Cayama, who, you know, has come back from some pretty gnarly stuff and needs to pack on a little more weight before he's able to handle the starter's workload. They traded one guy off that club, Jose Bello, in the Rafael Devers deal. Who am I missing? Let's go look through here. But yeah, there was a lot of guys on that club that were really, really kind of interesting. Oh, Luis De La Torre, who I probably should have ranked higher. But I didn't, and I regret it. Left-hander, throws really hard, and good slider, good changeup, or breaking ball, good changeup. I saw him again, and he was pretty good in the Cal League too. There's kind of a split camp on whether he's a starter or a reliever, but another guy that wasn't on my radar coming into the season who's pretty good.
But, okay, well, that's in Arizona. As you said, Florida was not as talented, but at the same time, there still were players who stood out. Who are two players who jumped out to you from the Florida Complex League?
Well, I mean, we'll cheat again and go to number one. Esteban Mejia was really good, and it was a nice little payoff for chasing him around for a week. You know, there was some off-the-field things that kind of that kept me from seeing the one start while he was there, but I got him on my last day, and, you know, right-hander.
I mean, I'll cover that. Like, the off-the-field stuff is they had a tragedy. Like, they had an off-the-field tragedy.
I'm sorry, yeah, the Orioles did. Yes. And then I went to see him at the Pirates, and the Pirates decided to bar all media that day, so all media being me and a photographer, which, you know, you could – the area where we were panned in, I got a nice view of his butt for three innings before I decided to go home. And then – I went to see him the last day against the Red Sox, and holy goodness, you know, like I said, sat 99 to 100, touched 102, really nasty slider, really nasty changeup. There's going to have to be some changes with the delivery. The arm action is, you know, like looks like he's trying to shake hands with the second baseman. And that might hamper his command and control, but that day he was in total control, and he's had flashes of brilliance. He had flashes of brilliance with Delmarva. I believe he's on the development list right now. Which is kind of a bummer because I was hoping to see him in that final series.
If you're on the development list right now and we're where we are in the season, you could get one more start, but chances are you're probably done.
Yeah, he's probably done. Probably hit an innings cap. But he was really interesting. I did not see who else do I want to bring up. Jorge Rodriguez was a really interesting one with Boston. Didn't know a whole heck of a lot about him, but that system is obviously very good right now. But certainly one of the best at catch and throw guys in the low minors. I mean, he gave me two pop times of 184 and 187. And it was just on the money both times. I've heard he was clocked up to like 87 miles an hour from behind the plate, which is elite, elite, elite. Can hit a little bit too, but he is a weapon behind the plate. And it was, you know, another fun. The best part of this job is finding guys who I didn't know about. And it's very hard to go in completely blind on anybody these days. But I didn't know about him.
The lower level you go, the easier it is, though.
Yes, like it's absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said with the DSL, you go and you go, okay, I don't know who this is, but it's certainly interesting. So that's the fun part about it. Like I said earlier in the broadcast, if I go watch Thomas White, I'm not going to be surprised about anything unless LSU Tommy White shows up. And it's,
that would be surprising.
That would be very surprising.
He looks shorter.
Different and worse thicker at pitching. Yeah. But
not throwing 97, 98. I don't know why.
Yeah. But
throwing with the other hand too. Like I thought he was a lefty.
Other than that, Miss Lincoln. I know what to expect coming out of there, you know, but I don't know what to expect with some of these guys. Some of these guys I know, like, okay, they're interesting, but I couldn't tell you what they throw or if the hype is real or yada, yada, yada. So that's the fun part about it. And you get to do that for a week. You leave a week in the DSL, you think, I need more time. Like it happened this year that, like, Thursday, I looked at the box scores, I'm like, every arm I wanted to see went on Thursday, and I just can't be at five different stadiums.
They haven't figured out a way to,
you know. No, not yet.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
But, well, that leads in perfectly into, which is, what are two players? But I did also want to throw this out to you. And an organization, I say an organization because we said there are 50. If you probably know this, if you're listening to if you are at the 35 minute mark or so of this podcast and you don't know that there are 30 MLB teams, I don't know how that's possible. If you're listening this far in, you know that. And there are 52 DSL teams. So we say organization because, yes, some of these orgs do like kind of this is the DSL Padres Gold versus DSL Padres whatever. But some, you know, Royals, Fortuna versus Royals, you know, Ventura, you know, things like that. Some teams bounce them back and forth. So we're looking at these as the organization more than we are any individual team. But start with the players. Who are a couple of players? This is a little sneak peek of our DSL top prospects list as well.
I'll start with Juan Sanchez with the Blue Jays. You know, that was a weird day I had where there's very rarely night games in the DSL, but I had a chance on my last day there to do a double up, and I saw Blue Jays blue in the morning and Blue Jays red at night, and Blue Jays
that's blue. A big faced, rivalry.
Well, they didn't face each other, but Blue Jays blue faced the Giants, so I got to see Josuar Gonzalez, who, I'll spoil it, he's going to be your number one prospect in this league. He's on the top 100. If you're following along, it's probably hard not to put a guy who's on the top 100 in the number one spot in this league. But then you go to the next game and you see Sanchez. And I knew he was kind of interesting. And you look at him immediately and it's one of those off the bus guys. It's like, oh my. And it's, you know, clearly a guy built to demolish baseballs. And he absolutely did that. First at bat, I believe, was a triple that just missed being a home run. Second at bat was a home run that just missed, you know, entering orbit. I think the third at bat was a sac fly. And then there was I had to leave early because I was a little worried that the Ubers would stop running. And I did not want to be stranded that far from my room. But he doubled later, and I think he missed the cycle by a single. And if you look at his numbers right now, I know what we said about stats, but my goodness, he has murdered baseballs with frightening regularity.
That made me think of, that was not the day though that your Uber broke down.
No, that was a different day. Fortunately, the Uber broke down about 3/4 of a mile from my room.
Okay, little travelogue, break here before we get to the next prospect who stood out. You've now gone down to the DSL for 2 years.
Correct.
Right. What is it like for a baseball? If you are a baseball nut, a baseball fan, but the DSL might as well be, you know, it's a concept you don't even really understand yet. What is it like going to a game in the DSL?
I mean, it's the All-Star game is raucous. Like, they have a lot of people there. It's hard. I mean, I checked my cameras every couple innings, but it's hard to do that because it's like, imagine yourself at a really crowded airport gate and you're trying to get on the plane at the last second. There's just so many people there. You're diving in and out and whatever. You can't really breathe. And they have a live DJ and the PA announcer who is talking over the action. Like, and there's a crucial moment in the game. And in Spanish, he's saying, it's a crucial moment in the game. Here comes the pitch. And it's like, what is happening? And, you know, guy will hit a ground ball and he'll say, like, grounder to second. And there's the third out. It's like, this is a PA announcer. And he's not always getting everything right. But the rest of the game's pretty tame. There's nobody there. I went to that night game, like I said, with Juan Sanchez, and they just decided to start playing like a half an hour before the listed time. All right. Well, good thing I got here 45 minutes early, because they just decided to play whenever they were going to play. But there's, you know, it's the same as most complexes. It's occasionally you'll get some fans, some family and friends. Not a whole lot of people there. I mean, I went to one last year where I was the only person there not wearing a team jersey or anything. So that's pretty tepid, but you know, you got to see Wallace the Rally Rooster.
I was going to say, and the other thing you have to talk about is that there's also a Rally Rooster.
Well, Wallace the Rally Rooster, he's at the Marlins complex and he lives under constant threat, apparently, from what I hear, that, you know, the other teams want to catch him and cook him. But they have their live stream, and when they do good things or need to do good things, they'll catch him and put him in front of the camera and say, here's Wallace.
He does seem like he actually has some pretty impressive powers, does he not?
Well, he's writing a couple of chapters in our handbook this year. Yeah. It's under nom de plumes. Nom de plumage. But anyway, there's also, you know, you can see wild horses too. I hadn't seen wild horses before, but there was that last year at the Brewers complex. They were just hanging out behind the park. And also, you know, leaving one of the games, you see the security guard. And security guards in America are annoying, and they are overbearing. Well, these ones have shotguns. And, you know, that's little ratcheting it up a level. You don't see that in America. You might have handguns, but these guys have just shotguns, and they're just sitting there waiting for you to dare them. But it's a great time. Like, if you're a hardcore baseball fan, I would recommend it. Like, if you have the money and the means to go down there and maybe tie a couple games into a vacation, do it. It's fun, and you can go see your favorite prospects of whoever you root for in an atmosphere where you're not going to be, if you're not someone who likes mascots or MILB game, or the game is the thing. Like, minor league baseball is a weird dichotomy.
It's like you're at Buies Creek.
No, worse than that. Like, worse.
When you say worse, not worse.
Not worse, but more extreme than that. Like, Buies Creek, like, there were on-field things or whatever.
Oh, there weren't?
Occasionally. They tried a little bit.
No, there weren't. I went to many a game in Buies Creek where it was like, nope. Between innings, it was like,
well, maybe I remember a little more, but in any case, like, it's just the game. Whereas, like, in the minor league game, it's, you know,
right. There's a show. It's a game and a show.
Whatever. The game is the intermission between the various commercials. But that's kind of what I like about it. It's pretty, they do take a while sometimes, but it's just about the games.
I would say with that, 100%, there are no games that take longer. Whether there is a pitch clock being displayed or not, the pitch clock has not come to the DSL, and you have had, there have been near 5-hour games in the DSL this year.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of insane, but it's one of my favorite times of year. I mean, it's right there with the AFL for me. I did all three complex leagues in, I want to say, 50 days, which is, it's a lot, but it's fun. And it's a lot of video for you guys. But you wanted to get to the second player, and let's see, first player was Juan Sanchez. Who else?
First player was
It was Josuar. I think I also mentioned Juan Sanchez. So maybe I did mention two guys, but we'll go for three.
We'll give him one more.
We'll go for three here. Actually, you know what? We'll go into the organization. And, you know, I think, JJ, we talked off air. You're right. It is the Marlins. And it's a weird one because I'm going to say the Marlins, but they might not be as represented as you would think on the top 30, just because a lot of the arms that are interesting didn't pitch much. Like Johan for Santana touched 100 for me. But he pitched like 8 innings this year, so he's not going to qualify for the list. Cafredi Encarnacion is a gigantic left-hander who touched 100 like 8-9 times for me in a couple innings. Little erratic control command, but he, I don't think, pitched enough to qualify for this list. But the, you know, the gem is Kevin DeFranc, who is a huge person. He's like 6'4", 6'5", 260, something like that. He looks like a football player, but he throws 100. He's 17 years old. He backs it with a nasty slider and a pretty good changeup. And he's probably the second best pitching prospect in the league. And maybe if Kendry Chorio is a little safer than Kevin DeFranc, he's got more upside. It's the upside of a true like front of the rotation starter. If you look at the Marlins guys, mostly the pitching, they have Luis Araña too. He's pretty good. And Jose Castro hit the most home runs in the league, I believe. But they all are just physical, just monsters. They could be a high school football team and go up against, you know, like IMG Academy and or you know, De La Salle or something in Texas.
No, the thing that stood out, I remember when you were down there and you saying like that pitching staff really was one that jumped out. And mainly reason it jumped out is because it wasn't an arm. It was, did you see this guy or did you see this guy or did you see this guy? Which that's what makes it a little different. You know, again, we are talking about players who are as far away as you can be from the major leagues and still be in professional baseball. But the best chance you have of producing a impact big league pitcher is to have a number of these very intriguing arms in the DSL. And some will fall along the way, but that's how you're going to get to having an impact guy in the big leagues down the road.
Right. And like, I'm looking up Caffredi's numbers this year. I saw his debut, his season debut. He pitched a total of 3 innings this year. And that's over 5 outings. He had some disaster outings. His last 2 outings, August 9th and 16th, he went a combined 0 innings and allowed 7 earned runs while walking 9. When I say the control and command needs to come a little bit, there you go. But he throws 100. He's left-handed. He's physical. And he is 19 years old. So lot to dream on there, long way to go, but you won't see him represented on the DSL top 30 because he threw 3 innings.
Makes
my job a little bit easier. But, you know, if you don't, you do know about him because he's pretty famous, but if you don't know about him, you don't know that there's a lefty who's, what, 6'4", that's probably short, throwing 100 miles an hour. And he wasn't even throwing his best pitch that day. He threw a couple changeups.
That's also something else that is useful about going to the DSL is this is changing a little bit now because especially with hitters, because we now have the FSL and the AutoZone and all that. Sometimes you get more accurate follow-up measurements, but we've seen over the years, over and over, you see the players who are listed at my favorite one of recent years is Junior Caminero, who was listed at his signing weight of, I believe, 170 pounds until like last year, which I think in multiple handbooks I had to write, Caminero, who is at least 50 pounds heavier than his listed 170 pounds.
When I wrote up Aaron Judge for the handbook, I put him as, you know, 6'7", 230, and he tweeted me, I believe, and said, like, when did I lose 40 pounds or 30 pounds or whatever it was? I don't know, man. I don't have a scale and I don't follow you around.
Right. But yeah, a lot of times, especially with DSL players, are the most likely player sign, you know, like is you get listed at your signing height and weight. And if you sign at 16, sometimes, okay, this is JJ story time. The worst version of this was if you remember many years ago now, but Juan Duran was one of the 2 big international signings of the Reds. Juan Duran and Yoermin Rodriguez. Rodriguez made the majors. I don't think Duran ever did. But Duran signed, when he signed as a 16-year-old, I believe he was 6'3". And 2 years later, he was 6'7", pushing 6'8". And the problem was, they didn't expect that. He didn't expect that. Like, there was no, like, oh, we knew he was going to grow into this. He just got too big. Like his body took like 3 years to adjust to that height, that growth spurt. And he never kind of got back. He like lost some of the athleticism. He lost some of that body control that he had before, you know, but the flip side of that is you will see players who add literally 40 pounds of good weight. And I know that some of you hear that and go, oh yeah, I'm sure that that's quote, good weight. No, you are talking about players who, in some cases, it's sad to say, it's literally the first time that they're getting top-notch nutrition and, you know, working with nutritionists and sometimes getting their teeth fixed to where they're able to eat, you know, the way that they should to be the premium athlete that they are.
All right, bear story time. It was that jumps off really nicely. Last year, I was in this league, is in the DSL, and one secret about the DSL, it's not a secret at all, is it rains a lot. A lot. And I'm at the Rockies complex, and it rained, and I got wet, and then they did the field, and they started up, and 7 minutes later, it rained again, and it was a downpour, and the game was over. So I am soaked. I look like I've been through a dunk tank. It's the world's worst wet t-shirt contest. It's terrible. I am a soggy mess. And fortunately, my cameras are fine. But the Rockies people were nice enough to take me in, dry my clothes, give me Rockies gear, and feed me. And that's where I'm jumping onto your story. The food was really, really good. It was like a beef stew or something, if I remember correctly. And they had stuff to drink and sides. And it was like, oh my goodness, this is like, these kids are getting actual good food prepared by a chef every day. Like this is, it's not insignificant that these kids are getting really good nutrition. They mostly live in dorms that are near the complexes. You know, the commute to the field is walking downstairs a little bit. And I have heard tell of like some of the guys like DeFranc or whatever, guys who are too big. They did have to get custom beds for some of these players. It's like you can't just buy a bed for a 6'7" guy off the rack or wherever you buy beds. I'm a 5'7" guy. It's pretty easy to find those. So, you know, they all live together and they all, you know, form this sense of camaraderie in that area for a while. And there's a little bit of that, too, in the domestic complex leagues as well. So it's a very, like I said, controlled atmosphere for the first couple of years of a guy's career until they move on to full season ball. And obviously things have gotten better in that regard, too, because they, you know, they pay for housing now and you don't have to like scramble for a, you know, if you're like Juan Soto back in the day, what, a 2 week lease at, you know, Harrisburg or whatever. But that's a long way of saying, yeah, things have gotten a lot better down there and they live in a more controlled environment and they can put on good weight rather easily and it not be like good weight.
But well, that leads us.
I was gonna say, I did hit on the org. So yeah, the other orgs that stand out right now are the Twins and the Red Sox. They've got some pretty good position players coming up. And if you read the hot sheet today, the Twins have one of the best pitchers in the league in Santiago Castellanos. So, you know, those two orgs, I'm sitting here with a 12-page note file on the DSL and probably a good page of them is Twins and Red Sox.
Well, that's, you know, that. So again, get ready to read a lot more about that at baseballamerica.com. But that leads us also into what we like to, even with Jeff off this week, we're still going to finish it with our prospect soapboxes. As we do every week, we're looking at players who are not in the top 100, who we find interesting for one reason or another. And speaking of Twins, I'll start us off this week. And I'm going to talk about a Twin because this is someone that you and I actually were talking about a little bit yesterday. Because if you remember a couple of years ago, Gabriel Gonzalez was traded from the Mariners to the Twins in the Jorge Polanco deal, in a deal that the Twins didn't get a whole lot else out of, to be honest. But Gonzalez went out last year, battled back injury that kind of really struggled with that. Didn't really hit. This year, went back to high A to start the year, which is not a great sign. And you're thinking, okay, this is the prospect who's probably, you know, got to really have a turnaround if he's going to kind of regain that prospect status. They had a couple of years ago when he was a Mariners prospect. Bat first, corner outfielder. Well, credit to Gonzalez this year. Gonzalez started the year at high A, hit his way to double A, has now hit his way to triple A. 329, 400, 512 overall with 13 homers, 33 doubles this year. Key things are he's been healthy and he did lose some weight because he got a little, in addition to the back injury, which I'm sure this kind of tied together because it's obviously harder to work out, harder to stay in shape if you are battling an injury like that. But you put it all together, He's shown more athleticism this year, and he's shown a much better bat. I would say that 100% he has turned himself back from being kind of, he was a significant prospect. It's going to have to hit. It's a bat first profile, but you had that, and then you had him kind of, if you're a bat first profile and you're not hitting, it's kind of really hard to be a significant prospect. Here we are again. He's hitting. He's in AAA. He's now looking once again like a guy who could be up in the majors in 2026. A definite name to watch. You know, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. Rule 5 eligible at the end of the season. I can't imagine that the Twins won't add him to the 40-man, which if we'd have talked about this at this time last year, I'd have said I can't imagine that the Twins will add him to the 40-man. So a very nice bounce-back season for Gabriel Gonzalez. And a guy who, if again, if you've kind of lost track of him after his struggles last year, he's really had a better year this year than he had in 23. And 23 is kind of the year that, you know, 22 and 23, he kind of hit enough to really put himself on the map. He kind of, you know, was a very significant prospect for the Mariners. He's now that once again for the Twins and a name to definitely watch going into the offseason.
Right.
So that's mine. I'm guessing you're going to go more obscure.
I am. Because I didn't know what I was going to do before this one. I came up with it on the fly, but I'll add to yours. I tweeted it the other day, but he, Gonzalez, is one of two guys who in the minors this year who are 21 years or younger, have 400 or more plate appearances, and are carrying a 300, 400, 500 slash line. He's right at 400 on the on-base percentage, so he barely qualifies. The other guy you might have heard of, his name is Connor Griffin, and he's the number one prospect in the sport. So it's pretty good company to be in. But my guy is Ramon Marquez with the Phillies. He's a right-hander who was in the back of the top 25 for the FCL, and he has moved to the Florida State League and been pretty good. There was one really bad outing in there, but his last three starts, he's 2-0, 193, 14 innings, 10 hits, 18 punch-outs, 2 walks, which a 9-1 punch-to-walk rate is, I think that's good. He's got, you know, mid-90s fastball, slider and changeup that have a chance to be above average. Needs to show a little bit more improved command of all the things, of all his pitches, which, you know, understandable given that he is just 19 years old and most 19-year-olds do have to work on their command and control. But it's an up-arrow prospect for the Phillies that, you know, we got into the top 30 after the deadline, but, you know, I'd heard that name as a one to watch in the spring. Just kind of a keep-him-on-your-radar sort of guy. But they didn't have enough space, I didn't think, at the time. When you go, I happened to run into him in the Florida State, no, Florida Complex League, when he was going against Johnny King, also a really good arm in the Blue Jays system. He was up higher in the top 25 of the Florida Complex League. So that was a fun matchup that day. But he's an up arrow, interesting Phillies prospect to watch as you know, their system starts to thin a little bit with graduations.
That's a good way to end it. It's been another hopefully jam-packed prospect podcast that you enjoyed. If you do enjoy this and you're on YouTube, please give us an up arrow. That helps other people see it. Like, you know, that's the likes. Subscribe as well if you want to make sure that you get this every week. Try to put these out every Wednesday, come rain or shine, in season or off season. So we keep these going year-round. And we also, you know, if you're on a podcast, you know, like and leave us a review. Again, we can't do all this. We can't send Josh to the Arizona Complex League, the Florida Complex League, the Dominican Summer League without our
subscribers. I guess based on your preamble earlier, I'm going to the Italian League next year?
No, you're not, okay. Not yet. If I'm going to do that, if I haven't made it to Japan yet, that's my bucket list item. You know, you're not getting to go to Italy until I get to go to
Japan. Don't worry, I'm not pushing for that real hard.
But again, we can't do this without Baseball America subscribers. So thank you to our Baseball America subscribers. You are what allows us to do this and provide the information. And again, if you are a Baseball America subscriber, there's a lot of this information over at baseballamerica.com. We would recommend that you check it out. For Josh, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.